want you to open up to John, the 14th chapter. That's going to be our main text this evening, is John chapter 14. And tonight I'm going to deal with a question that was placed, I'm assuming, in the box on the back there, where if you got sermon questions or sermon ideas, you place it in there. I'm assuming that's where it is. Michael handed me the card, so I'm assuming he got it out of there, unless someone directly handed it to him. And so we're going to deal with one of those questions. I haven't dealt with one of those in a while. I think Michael has, but tonight I draw the card. And if it was your card when I asked the question, surprise, surprise, I lost your card. But I have the main idea of what your question was. But there were multiple questions about this verse on the card, and I don't know that I got all of them. So if that's the case, you can come ask me later, or you can kick me, or do whatever you need to do, but I don't have the exact question in mind. But to set the groundwork, I'm going to put up here a scale of 1 to 10. All right, so we understand the concept of a 1 to 10. 1 being, bad, 10 being the greatest, okay? So I want you to put in your minds, on the scale of 1 to 10, the miracles or the works of Jesus. Like, what numerical value would you give to Jesus' ability to perform miracles and the miracles in which Jesus performed? I'll give you a second to think about that. Maybe some of you said a 7. And you say, Wes, why would you say a 7? Well, I don't know. I thought some of you might say a 7. So here might be some reasoning for a 7. Jesus wasn't the only one who did miracles. There were plenty of miracles in the Old Testament. There were plenty of people who performed a lot of miracles in the Old Testament. So it's not like just the ability to perform miracles puts you at a 10, but it would be kind of in the grand scheme of things, the ability might put you at a 10. Well, okay, so what would be some of the amazing things that Jesus did in that? Oh, he raised people from the dead. Guess what? People in the Old Testament who could perform miracles, guess what they also did? Raise people from the dead. And so there is an interesting little thought about that. When you think about Jesus' ability to perform these miracles and these works, I immediately would jump to a 10. I would say, like, Jesus is the greatest at performing miracles. And obviously, I would be correct, right? Because he is God, and he performed everything with the ability to raise himself even from the dead. No one else was able to raise themselves from the dead. They may have been able to raise someone else, but not themselves. So to me, that's the trump card in all of this. But I want you to look in John chapter 14, and I want you to notice verse 12 here of John 14. Jesus says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do, and greater works than these he will do, because I go to the Father." I want you to think about that. How will it be possible for anyone to do the same miracles, the same works of Jesus, and do greater works of Jesus? That is what the person wants to know. Because if I picture that in my head, that means we got to now go outside of a scale of 1 to 10, and we got to get an 11. And how in the world do we do that without rigging and cheating the system? That just doesn't happen. So tonight I hope to be able to answer that question, maybe not definitively, but with some ideas that maybe you'll be able to process and to think about of like, oh, you know what, I'll go with that one. Or, oh, I'll go with those. Because I've got three of those at the end of this lesson that I think we can see a possibility of three different ways in which these works that this individual who believes can do. But before we get to those three possibilities, I want to make sure we understand the background of this text very quickly. I want you to notice the background of the text, that this falls in a context of a discussion with Jesus and his disciples at the Last Supper. It's John 13 through through John 16. And you remember in John 13, that's when Jesus comes in and he washes the feet of the disciples. You remember that event? And they're all like, well, no. And Peter's like, no, Lord. And Jesus says, unless I wash your feet also, you're not going to have any part of it. And Peter's like, well, don't just stop at my feet, Lord. Go and give me the whole body wash. And you don't understand, Peter. But I've done these things so that you have an example, et cetera, et cetera. We get into chapter 14. And I want you to notice that in chapter 14, look at verse 1 with me, of something that these disciples are going to need to have. Jesus says in verse 1, let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. The next few verses are going to be things in which these disciples are going to have to believe about Jesus. And he's going to tell them some things that may be really hard to believe. But yet what he is requiring of them and what he is needing them is to believe what he's about to say. One, don't let your heart be troubled. Everything is going to be okay. Don't be anxious. Notice how the chapter ends in chapter 14, and you don't have to go and read that, but he kings the same type of thing where it's okay. Don't be troubled from all these things. So anyhow, what is it that he wants to do? I want you to notice with me. Keep reading in verse 2. In my Father's house are many rooms, or your translation say many mansions. There's plenty of places for you. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. The first thing that he needs them to believe is that when he goes away and he leaves them, it is not that he is abandoning them. It is rather that he is going to a place to prepare for them to be reunited. You understand that? Where if someone that you've been following for years and years just all of a sudden dies, and 40 days later, all of a sudden disappears, and you never see him again for quite some time, might you feel like you were abandoned and you would never see that person again? You might feel that way. Jesus is wanting them to understand that when I leave you, it's because I'm doing something for you. I am preparing this place for you. And if that weren't true, what I have told you. Like, you know that what I say is true. So when I tell you I'm going to do something, that's what I'm going to do. So, okay, like, fine. You're going to do this. But notice the next verse. Notice verse 4. And you know the way to where I'm going. And Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way? You understand that? Like, okay, fine, you're going somewhere. But how do we know the way? We don't even know where you're going. Where did he just say he was going? To his Father's house. Do you think that they're understanding that means he's going to heaven? I tend to think not. I think they're probably thinking the temple or somewhere like that. I don't know what they're thinking, but clearly they are not sure of how to get to Jesus. But guess what? They knew the way. How did they know the way? Verse 6. I am the way and the truth and the lie, and no one comes to the Father except through me. If you believe in me and you follow me, guess where you are going to end up at? At the place where I am going to be. In my Father's house and with my Father, where there is a place that is ready for you. Which means they had to believe it wasn't going to be one of these other Christs that would come up. It wasn't going to be one of these other deceivers that would come up, as we talked about on Wednesday night. but it was going to be that He was the way to the Father, even though it might not look that way, given that He was going to be killed in all this. He was that way. Well, what? How do you know this way? And then He rebukes them in verse 7. If you had known Me, you would have known My Father also. And from now on, you do know Him, and you have seen Him. Remember how He starts this whole thing? If you believe in God, believe also in Me. They would clearly say that they believe in God, right? That He is the one true God, there is no other. They also believe that Jesus is the Christ. They believe that wholeheartedly. But what they aren't getting is the interrelationship between the Father and the Son. How you know Me, and therefore you know the Father. But what He says is, you don't know Me. And so you don't know the Father, but you're about to. You're about to know. And so Philip said to Him, Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough for us. And Jesus said, have I been with you so long, and you still do not know Me, Philip? Like, they just don't get it. Right? And all of these different things that if they just knew the Father, and they knew the Father, but they didn't understand how well they knew the Father. Because He says, whoever has seen Me has seen the Father. So how can you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in Me? Do you think they believed that or not? I think intellectually they believed that. That there was this relationship between them. But I'm not sure that they understood the length and the depth of that. But He goes on to explain what He means by they are in each other in this case. Notice this. The words that I say to you, I do not speak on My own authority, but the Father who dwells in Me does His work. You see, what Jesus has in Him is the Father, which is really strange for us and me to really quantify and picture. How could God the Father be in God the Son while having God the Holy Spirit in Him as well? That's a question to ask Michael. I'm turning that one over. But you understand the concept there. Jesus saying, the Father is in Me, so when you see Me, you see the Father. As Hebrews 1 would say, He is the exact representation of the Father. The Son is that exact representation. They are identical in the way in which they would act, in the way in which they would teach, in the way in which they think, in the way in which they do what they do. They are step by step by step together, one in the same. And so notice again the word in verse 11. Believe Me that I am in the Father and the Father is in Me. You understand what He keeps saying in these few verses? Believe Me about what I'm telling you. Believe Me that the Father is in Me and I am in Him. And we have this relationship, and I'm not doing anything on my own but what the Father says to do. So I want you to back up for a second and say, well, what in the world does that mean? That means what I'm telling you, if you're Jesus and He's saying to His disciples, what I'm telling you isn't a lie. Because you believe that every word from God is true. Guess what? You can believe that every word that I'm telling you is also true. So why would you believe that? Just because somebody tells you something, or as I said Wednesday night, you read on the internet? No. I want you to notice the rest of this verse, verse 11. Let's pick up and read back to the beginning of the verse. Believe Me that I am in the Father and the Father is in Me, or else believe on account of the works themselves. He says, you guys have seen enough miracles that you should be able to know that what I say will come true. And they could use that all alone. They never would have had to have heard all the teachings and all the things in which Jesus told them if they had just believed or processed, whatever you want to say, about those miracles alone. And these miracles, these works that Jesus did, they are powerful enough that that alone can convince someone that Jesus is who He said He is. That's what He's saying. And then you have verse 12. Truly, truly, I say to you. Who is He talking to again? Those apostles. The people that He's just been talking about going and preparing a room for Him and believing, that need to believe in Him. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in Me will also do the works that I do. I want you to understand this. Oftentimes when we see this phrase, whoever believes, we often expand that out to literally whoever believes. But in the context, it's not whoever believes generically, but it is whoever believes out of you. You will do the works that I do. You think that would be pretty cool if you're an apostle? They've already been doing miracles, right? But have they raised anybody from the dead? No. Not raised anybody from the dead. We've not seen them do several other miracles. But He says, not only will He do the works that I do, but greater works than these He will do. What does that put in your head if you're Peter, or you're Philip, or you're Thomas? Isn't it the same question that this person asked? How? How in this world can the disciple ever become greater than the teacher in all of these miracles that we have seen Him do? But I'm supposed to believe every word that that man says. So I must be going to be doing some amazing things. Whoever believes, and I want you to notice the reason why they're going to be able to do what He does and yet greater things. Why? Because I am going to the Father. You see, while Jesus was on earth, guess who could not take the forefront? The apostles could not, right? But there's even more than that. Why were the apostles going to be able to do more than the Son? I want you to notice down in verse 16 here, verse 26, that there will be many things. Verse 18 is interesting to me. That Jesus says, I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. But go back to verse 15. If you love Me, you will keep My commandments, He says. And I will ask the Father, and He will give you another helper or comforter. Or I think Michael likes to talk about how it's someone who is an advocate for you. Someone who is there to help you along the way, and He will be with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, or whom the world does not receive, because it neither sees Him nor knows Him, but you know Him, and for He dwells with you and will be in you. Throughout chapter 14, chapter 15, and chapter 16, Jesus makes it abundantly clear to these disciples that if Jesus stays on the earth, they are hamstrung. They can't understand everything, and they can't do everything. But when He goes to the Father, He will ask the Father to send them someone who will make them be able to do all of these amazing things, and that will be the Holy Spirit, even the Spirit of truth. And so that is something that is very special to those disciples as well. That they would be able to remember all the things that Jesus said to them. You remember that passage? Right here in this conversation. And so what we're really dealing with, I personally believe, is not a statement about to everyone who believes. Because we know that in the New Testament times, even when miracles were being performed, that not everyone had the ability to perform miracles. You can go to 1 Corinthians 12 and you can see that clearly. Not everyone had the ability to perform miracles. So if this is a blanket, if you believe in Jesus, you're going to do greater miracles than Jesus, then we're way off the boat somewhere along the line and I don't know where to get back on. But it has to be in context to these 12, one would go away, but to these disciples who needed to believe what Jesus was saying, that he's just upping the ante. You think this is amazing, you just wait and you see what you're going to do and what I'm going to do through you. Does that make sense? So let's talk about how that could possibly be that these disciples would have greater works than Jesus. I got three reasons, potential reasons here. I'm going to start with when we think about miracles in general, we just think about the power of the miracles, right? That's a pretty amazing thing by itself. We mentioned the raising from the dead and the trump card of, by the way, I raised myself from the dead. Like, you do that, Elisha. It just doesn't happen. But I want you to think about some of the things that he said to his disciples. Remember how when they had just a faith issue? He said to them, even if you just have a little faith, you could say to this mountain, be up and cast into the sea. Literally? I don't know. That seems to me to be like a pretty big statement. Mountain, go get in the sea. Well, imagine if a disciple actually did that. There's somebody in the town that was giving him a hard time, and they're looking at that mountain. Let's say it's a mountain in Athens. Athens in Greece. And they're looking at that mountain. Say, oh, so you don't believe me that this Jesus of Nazareth is the Christ, the Son of God, and you don't believe that you have to be baptized into water for the remission of your sins, and you don't believe that you have to remain faithful, etc., etc. You go with whatever COC doctrine you want to go with. And you say, all right, you don't believe me? See that mountain right there? I'm about to toss that into the Mediterranean. And you see that mountain. Are you kidding me? How did you do that? Oh, this Jesus, who the Jews crucified, whom God raised from the dead, who God has made him both Lord and Christ. What do I need to do again? Do you understand how that would be incredibly powerful if that miracle were to take place? We don't have any record of that miracle taking place, but Jesus seems to make it clear, unless he's just talking clearly hyperbole, if you need to do that, that could be done. Or if you think about some of the miracles that we actually do have taking place. You think about in Acts chapter 5, and I want you to turn there to Acts chapter 5. In Acts chapter 5, you have some interesting statements that are made here in Acts 5. And in verse 12, that many signs and wonders were regularly done among the people by the hands of the apostles. That's how it all begins. They were doing a lot of signs and they were doing a lot of wonders. Now I want you to notice in verse 15. So they carried out the sick into the streets. And they laid them on cots and mats, so that as Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on some of them. Do what? Do we have Jesus' shadow ever healing anyone? But yet we have, in the days after the resurrection, we have the shadow of Peter being able to make people well. How amazing is that, right? We've heard people say, Jesus, you don't have to be there, just say the word, and it's done. Or Jesus, you don't even have to know that I'm coming up to you and I'm touching you. I just need to touch the hem of your garment and all will be made well. We've seen that take place. We didn't see Jesus with his shadow. That's pretty powerful, right? Or what about Paul? You go to Paul in Acts the 19th chapter. Paul would not have been in this private conversation before the crucifixion of Jesus. I want to make sure that I make that clear. But we can see, as we're going to study on Wednesday nights, Paul was an apostle of Jesus Christ. The 3 years that Michael keeps talking about in the wilderness and in the desert, that plays a pretty big factor in that, okay? So Acts 19, we have Paul performing some miracles. I want you to look with me to verse 11. And notice how this is said. And God was doing extraordinary miracles by the hands of Paul. Remember back to that statement, I will go to the Father and I will ask Him to send you the Holy Spirit? That's who's doing the work, at the request of Jesus. Okay, that's just the way the process goes. Same thing we saw in Hebrews chapter 2. And God was testifying by miracles through the hands of the apostles. God, they were just the vessel. They were just the conduit from which God was doing His thing. But His thing was still greater yet. So notice here verse 12. Extraordinary miracles. So that even the handkerchiefs or aprons that had touched His skin were carried away to the sick, and the diseases left them, and evil spirits were cast out of them. They were take a napkin, brought an old handkerchief. They go, and I'm Paul, they wipe it on me, and they go home, and they lay that handkerchief on their sick, and they were being made well, and demons were being cast out. Not even there. That, again, very powerful. Or, there's a miracle in Acts the 13th chapter. A guy comes along. Paul and Barnabas are preaching, and there's a guy that comes along, and he's trying to oppose them. And he's trying to stop them. And Paul says, man, you son of the devil, basically. And he says, you know what I'm going to do? You're going to be blinded for a season. And then you will regain your sight again. And so this guy, guess what? He was struck blind, not forever, but for a time, for a season. Did you ever see Jesus making somebody blind? Or did you ever hear of Jesus making somebody blind, but only for a limited period of time? But yet, guess what was going to happen when his sight came back? You know who he was going to remember? Paul and Barnabas and the word in which they were preaching. And by the way, that day, the proconsul who was there, the ruler of the synagogue, he obeyed and followed the gospel. So it could be that. It could be power, okay? Or it could be one of these two other things, or it could be a combination. We see some very powerful things done. I think another reason could be just in sheer quantity. And by in sheer quantity, I mean there were going to be 12 disciples again. There are going to be 13 when you add Paul in there. Okay? But more than that, how long did Jesus perform miracles? 3 years? We'll go 3 years. We'll be generous with 3 years. How long will the apostles be performing miracles? Until they all die? 30 plus years for the majority of them. Could be up to 60 years for the Apostle John, if he made it to almost 100 AD. Think about the amount of miracles that could be performed in that amount of time by 12 different people. That would be a lot, right? Now, that could be it. Could be in just in sheer quantity. I don't think that is the idea. But I could think it is a factor of the idea. But the third and the final thing is, what about impact? The impact that the works and the miracles of the disciples are going to have a greater impact than the miracles of Jesus. I want to illustrate this in this way. The miracles of the disciples, they were all the world. The miracles of Jesus were in a very small area of the world. So let's put it up on the map here for a second. So I've got the green dots are the dots there of where Jesus, we have recorded that he performed miracles. This is not the only places that he performed miracles, but it's some of the places in which we have recorded. I just got tired of putting green dots on the screen, to be truthful with you, and I was like, you get the point. They're all right there, except for the one up in the top up there, up near Beirut, in between Tyre and Sidon. I put that up there because we don't know the exact location of that miracle, but that is the Syrophoenician woman, the Canaanite woman, whose daughter was sick, and she kept annoying her, and he said, come on now, woman, even the dogs. And she said, yeah, but the dogs get the crumbs that fall from the master's table. He said, well, great is your faith. I've not seen such great faith, not even in Israel. That's the furthest miracle that he performed. Okay? You ready? These are just recorded miracles of the apostles that we have in the book of Acts. Look at how they're the rest of the world. Of how you got Malta down there below Italy, where Paul only ends up there because there's a shipwreck. And when he's there, a viper jumps out of the fire, bites him, and he doesn't die. And the people of the island are amazed, and they think he is a god, pretty much. And he points them to Jesus. You have that in Malta. You have in Corinth. We know that he performed miracles in Corinth, based on 1 Corinthians 12 through 14. We know that he performed miracles there. We know that the one right below Bulgaria is Philippi. We know that he cast a demon-possessed girl, the demon, out of her there. You can just go down the list. You got the proconsul. You got them all. You got on Cyprus, that event that we saw in Acts 13. These are where we know they performed miracles. While just one little section of the world, while they may have seen a lot of them, the rest of the world could have seen just as many, if not more. But there's one other way in which I think we'd have an interesting thing. Is not only is it Israel versus the world, but the truth is what these miracles were producing in the world. They were producing believers throughout the entire world. Jesus only came literally to the sheep, lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then he sent his disciples go into all the world, baptizing all nations in the name of the Father and the Son. And so what you have throughout history are documented cases of where an apostle was in these nations. You can see it, India, Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Bulgaria, Romania, Turkey, Egypt, Libya, Spain. You go Italy, obviously. Like, you can just go through, and history will tell you that these disciples, by the time that they died, they were preaching and they were proving that Jesus was the Christ by these miracles that they were performing when they would get into a place. And I think that is the idea of greater works than these you will do. Yeah, there might be some more powerful miracles that you're going to perform than me, and that I didn't do these. But I think the idea is what you're going to put together for me as a group of people is going to be so much greater in scale than what I did right here in this tiny little part of the world. So you ready for how tiny Israel is in the part of the world? It's the size of the state of Alabama. Think about Jesus being only in the state of Alabama. You wouldn't have a huge impact there, would you? But he's got his fingers everywhere else around the world through these apostles. And look where it's at now. To the point, as we read in Colossians, the whole world had heard about you. That's pretty amazing. That, I think, is the greater works that Jesus is talking about. Maybe you're ready to believe because of all the works of Jesus and because of the words of the apostles. And you're ready to submit your life to Christ. Why wait? Come on, do it. Or maybe you need the prayers of the church. Why don't you come down as we stand and as we sing.